Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts of the George Washington University, sitting in today for Diane Rehm. She's off today. The U.S. Supreme Court heard a case yesterday about free speech and license plates. The court will decide whether the Texas Department of Motor Vehicles has a right to reject a veterans group's request for a license plate with a Confederate flag design. Joining me in the studio to talk about this case, it's called Walker versus Texas Division, Sons of Confederate Veterans. I have Garrett Epps. He's a professor of law at the University of Baltimore, also writes about legal matters for Atlantic Media. Catherine Culleton Gonzalez is here. She's with the Advancement Project, a program that focuses on voting rights and civil rights and First Amendment issues. And by phone from Annapolis, we have Jamie Raskin. He's a First Amendment lawyer, a professor of law at American University here, and also a state senator in Maryland. Welcome to you all. Thanks for having us here.
Great to be here.
You can join us, as always, here on the Diane Rehm Show. 800-433-8850 is our number. Email us at drshow@wamu.org. or send us a message through Facebook or Twitter. We want to hear what you have to say on this subject. Garrett Epps, this case was held yesterday. Fascinating arguments. What's the core issue at stake here?
Well, this case really isn't about the Confederate flag as such. It is about the claim that the state of Texas can exclude or include any message on its license plates with no First Amendment considerations whatsoever. They can simply say, we don't care to be associated with that message.
And they turned down the application from the Sons of the Confederacy.
At first it was adopted, and then there was a backlash. There were 39,000 comments submitted to the board that determines this, and they and including Governor Perry, who said, we don't really need this in our state. And they reversed their decision and said because it was offensive, that was the reason they gave, then that should not be that license plate. And this is almost the only plate that's ever been turned down.
Since there are well over 400 that have been approved, yes, including plates that praise Dr. Pepper and a hamburger joint.
Mighty fine burger. Yeah.
But what is at stake? If it's not the Confederate flag, it's basically, as I read it, the question of who's speaking here.
Exactly.
Is it the state of Texas, which has its name on the license plate, or is it the individual driver who's driving the car?
Yeah, the court is up against an exception to free speech that it itself created about 10 years ago. It's a new one. And that is the so-called government speech doctrine. When the government puts up a monument, it doesn't have to observe the First Amendment. It can put up a monument to anything it wants. And having created this category, the justices are now having a little buyer's remorse because the lawyer for the Society of Confederate Veterans said, you can't exclude any message. And he was asked, do you mean a swastika? No, you cannot exclude the swastika. What about jihad? No, you cannot exclude jihad. And Justice Kagan finally said, think of the worst racial slur you can imagine. And he said, no, they would have to include that as well. And the justices they're not pleased with that. On the other hand, Texas says, we don't have to give a reason. We just don't, if we don't like something. And they said, could you exclude Democrats and include Republicans? And the lawyers have basically said yes.
Well, let me bring in our other two experts because they have different views on what's acceptable. And Catherine Culleton Gonzalez, give us your take after having read the briefs, as I know you have, having listened to the arguments yesterday. Where do you and your organization come down on this case?
I guess looking at the big picture in this case, it really is about racial justice and what the Confederate flag symbolizes. I mean, that came up only twice in the oral argument yesterday, the issue of race, and it was brought up by Justices Kagan and Kennedy, as Garrett said. But it seemed to, you know, have even bothered Justice Roberts that, you know, something as offensive as a swastika or the worst racial epithet that anyone could think of would be allowed in government speech. And so the First Amendment rights, I think, you know, do have some limits. And even though it wasn't litigated this way, this is one of the, I think, the few times that I would agree with the Attorney General of Texas in saying that, you know, we actually have been, you know, litigating against them in the field of voting rights for quite some time. But I think that the Confederate flag is offensive to many people. And the reason it's offensive is it can be dangerous. It can provoke, implicit bias that we see across our society. We're not really living in a post-racial world any longer. So I think the fact that that came up at the end shows, you know, what's really at the heart of how this court views social justice and fundamental rights issues.
Are you uncomfortable as an organization taking the side of the state of Texas and not the side of civil libertarians who are on the other side?
And we're a civil rights group and a racial justice group, and we usually do agree with civil libertarians, but I think, you know, we would take a different position than, say, the ACLU did in their amicus brief in this case. And I think, you know, civil liberties groups may come around and also see, you know, take a look at the DOJ report on Ferguson, you know, take a look at, you know, really the war on voting we're in basically a backlash against changing demographics in our country. You know, we do have a lot of implicit bias that is provoked by these symbols, and the government does not have to accept a symbol that, you know, could provoke danger. That's very clear. You know, even.
But that's another issue. In all honesty, I think when you get to a question of inciting violence, that's a question of public safety, less of a question of free speech, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. But I think that the way that Texas did interpret public safety by denying a special license plate that would have referenced or looked like state troopers, is a pretty generous and broad standard they've used. And so the same standard could be applied to what the Confederate flag symbolizes, which is a dictatorship and terrorism.
Jamie Raskin, as a First Amendment lawyer and someone who sides with the position taken by the ACLU, please explain where you're coming from on this.
Well, there's a striking irony in the case, which is that Texas actually...
There's more than one irony in this case.
there are multiple ironies in the case, but the one that grabs me is that Texas actually engages in a lot of very clear government speech, which promotes the Confederacy. It sponsors a Confederate Heroes Day every year on January 19th, which celebrates Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis and so on. It's got Confederate symbolic display on the floor of the Capitol under the rotunda. It's got a state office building named after the Confederate Postmaster General John Reagan. So if they really care about...
And they
about,
sell Confederate memorabilia in the Capitol gift shop, if I read.
Yeah, and so they could certainly disengage far more powerful official symbolism entangling the state with the history of the Confederacy than assaulting people's private speech rights. And that's what this is all about. I mean, every state has got this. We went through this in Maryland, which is why I know about it. 17 years ago, the Sons of Confederate Veterans here challenged their exclusion being able to participate in the program. And actually, our Motor Vehicles Administration let them do it originally, and then there were some complaints about it, and then they said, you know, so there are some people who say that your private specialty plate is offensive. And so then they revoked it, and they went to court, and the federal court struck it down, saying this is clear viewpoint discrimination. You can't censor somebody's speech because somebody else thinks it's offensive. You know, Texas has pro-life plates. There are pro-choice plates out there because it's open to the public. Anybody who gets together 25 or 30 citizens and they're willing to pay their $15 or $20 fee gets to create one of these. So it's a little private, it's a little public speech forum, what we call a limited public forum in First Amendment analysis. And so they can't discriminate because other people are offended. The whole point of the First Amendment is that you have to accept the fact that other people will say things that are offensive to you.
Now, do you think there's a, following the arguments in the court yesterday, where the justices, as Garrett Epps said, sort of kept pushing the lawyers to see whether there were any limits at all, would you be comfortable with a swastika on a license plate in Maryland? Would you be comfortable with a vile racial slur? Is there any limit at all here in your view?
Of course not. I would totally not be comfortable with it personally, but that, of course, is not the constitutional test. I mean, again, you know, we've had a ruling that struck down a ban on the Confederate insignia for 17 years. We've had no swastikas. We've had no, jihad. And, of course, those people can put bumper stickers on now, and they're not doing it. So, you know, some of this stuff is, you know, a kind of parade of horribles that gets away from what the real issues are here. I mean, look, under the First Amendment, the government cannot define the meaning of a symbol and say, here is the official politically correct interpretation of the Confederate flag, the American flag, or any other symbol, and then decree that one is acceptable and one is
right.
not. You know, under the First Amendment, we all get to interpret what symbols mean for ourselves.
And Garrett Apps, this seems to me one of the key variables here is, what does the Confederate flag mean? Because to the Veterans Organization, it's a symbol of honor mm-hmm. and heritage and history.
Right.
To people like Catherine, it's a symbol of racial oppression.
Well, what was fascinating about the argument, Steve, was that they spent almost no time talking about the battle flag.
But that is at the core of a lot of this argument.
Absolutely. But the real question that was being asked the court was, you know, Jamie said this is a private speech forum. The state of Texas, citing some case law, says absolutely not. It is a First Amendment-free zone. Our license plates, they belong to us. And we can let anybody speak we want to, and we can keep anybody we want to out for no reason at all. And so it's a very sweeping claim that the Texas has made, building on the court's recent case law. And you could see on the justices' faces, they were thinking, you know, we may have gone down a blind alley here, you know, by giving the state so much control.
That's Garrett Epps. He's a professor of law at University of Baltimore. Catherine Cullerton Gonzalez is with me from the Advancement Project. Jamie Raskin, First Amendment law professor at American University. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in for Diane, and we're going to be back with your comments and your calls. Stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from American University, dedicated to educating wonks to use knowledge to change the world. More at american.edu/wonk. From Vicki and Roger Sant and Island Press, which offers solutions to environmental problems, in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working together to build a culture of health for all. On the web at rwjf.org.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. And with me by phone is Johnny Holly. He is the division commander for the state of Texas's Sons of Confederate Veterans. And Mr. Holly, thanks for joining us on the Diane Rehm Show. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
And let me start with this. You're the organization that brought this case. You've brought a number of cases around the country and made this a mission of yours. We've already heard that 9 states, including Maryland, does allow these license plates. Give us the background of why it's so important to your organization to give people the chance to display this symbol on their license plates.
Well, we are a heritage group. We try, and our goal is to honor our ancestors and what they fought for, which we believe was a freedom for themselves and to protect their homeland from an invading army. I mean, the North invaded the South. The South didn't invade the North. And the soldiers of the Confederacy were fighting for their homes, their families, and their way of life. And the battle flag is not a Confederate flag, per se. I mean, it had no government status. It was not the flag of the Confederacy. It was the soldier's flag, and it was designed strictly to give a symbol that the soldiers could carry into battle, which would, in many ways, differentiate southern units from northern units mm-hmm. who carried the Stars and Stripes. And our ancestors fought and died under that flag on their own homeland, many of them on their own farms and plantations and in their own cities, to defend their homeland. And we think that's an honorable thing. That's what our ancestors did in 1776 when they broke away from England.
Now, Mr. Holly, the folks who take the other side would say to you, you use the phrase way of life, defending their way of life. And critics would say that way of life involved the massive oppression and enslavement of a single race, and that that way of life is not something that should be honored on the license plates of Texas. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, the South has been vilified as the home and the seat of slavery, and it wasn't. Slavery existed in the United States for 100 years or more, more than that, in the North and in the South and all over the United States. Slavery is not a stigma that should be attached strictly to the South. It's a stigma of the whole United States of America. And not one single slave was brought to this country on a ship bearing the Confederate flag. If you'll look around up in the New England area and see some of the old families and where they made their money, they made it from the slave trade. The ships out of Nantucket and Boston and all those areas were the ships that brought the slaves to this country, along with the ships of Spain and England and Spain and all other countries. So why should the South be the only section of the country that is forced to bear this stigma?
Well, I guess the critics would say because the South was the only section of the country that seceded from the Union on the basis of that issue.
Well, that was not the basis of why we seceded from the Union. I mean, only about 10 or 12% of the people in the South even owned slaves. Do you really believe that all those people saw their homes and cities destroyed over something that they really had no connection to? Now, slavery was, we left the Union because of the taxation and the usurping of states' rights and many, many, many issues. But the reason the war was fought is very simple. It was because the North invaded the South.
Mr. Holly,
yes, go ahead.
Mr. Holly, let me ask you one other question. The arguments yesterday in the Supreme Court and the lawyers for your side were pressed repeatedly by the justices about whether there were any limits to free speech, the basis for your legal case. And people were asked, would it be okay if a swastika was on on the state license plates? Would it be okay if a racial slur? Suppose someone said, I want a license plate that says, to hell with Texas, or Jefferson Davis was a racist idiot. Would you say that that was permissible?
Well, to begin with, they could never meet the criteria for getting a state license plate. You have to be a nonprofit organization. There are various and sundry rules and regulations.
But that's not really the point, Mr. Holly. I mean, there are plenty of private organizations, public organizations, private organizations, 450 license plates. I'm asking you whether you would be comfortable. This is basically what your lawyer said yesterday, that the state should accept any slogan or any license plate, and I'm asking you whether you would be comfortable with a statement you disagreed with, like Jefferson Davis was a racist idiot. Would that be okay if someone asked for a license plate?
Well, there are state license plates down here that a lot of people disagree with, like Planned Parenthood and various and sundry mm-hmm. ones on abortion. So to answer that question is basically, no, I would not be happy with it. I wouldn't be comfortable with it, and I would be offended by them. But you have to remember, where does the First Amendment end? I mean, if you say, well, this group can do it, but this group can't do it. You know, that if we're going to live in a free country and we're going to have a constitution, then we have to accept the ramifications of that. And there are going to be times when offensive things are put on. I see dozens and dozens of offensive bumper stickers every day. I see people wearing T-shirts that I wouldn't have allowed my children to leave, even to own, more or less leave the house wearing them. But, you know, freedom of speech is for everybody. You know, you might not like it, but if we're going to start defining it and restricting it under certain issues, then we're going to have to throw the whole thing out the window because it no longer is viable.
Mr. Hawley, you really appreciate you joining us on the Diane Rehm Show this morning. Johnny Hawley is the division commander for the state of Texas's Sons of Confederate Veterans, that party to this case that was heard in the Supreme Court yesterday. Thanks again for being with us, Mr. Hawley.
You're welcome. Thank you. Good day.
Okay. Thanks. Catherine Cullen, you heard Mr. Hawley argue that the price of free speech at times is to be offensive. And Jamie Raskin was making that case earlier. One of the issues that was posed by the yesterday at the court was, if you limit free speech, where do you draw the line? And how do you answer Mr. Hawley, who says that the price of free speech is sometimes to be offended?
I think that that's true, but I think that the Confederate license plate in this context could be, you know, more than offensive. The standard, there is no legal standard at the moment, so the court's really up in the air about, you know, what the limit should be. But obviously, there has to be some kind of limit. If it was strict scrutiny, that would be, is there a compelling state interest? Or if it was a reasonable person test, that would be a reasonable person test. But I think take it in the context of Texas. Texas, that flag represents lynchings of black and brown men. And women. It represents enslavement. It represents racial terrorism. And today, in the world that we live in, I think a reasonable person, as the mother of children of color, would say, you know, watch out for the Texas license plate people, right? You're reasonably going to say, I have some fear of the state putting that on their license plate. I have some fear of the state of Texas and motorists being confused about what the meaning of that is. And I think that could be a limiting principle. I know the case wasn't litigated that way, but to answer your question, I think, you know, this court seems to think we're in a post-racial era, but also admit that there are some limits to what it is you can do.
Jamie Raskin, how do you answer that argument?
See, there are a few things. One is I want to dispute something that our friend from Texas said. The North did not invade the South. We were all one union, and the Civil War established that we, the people, created the union, and states cannot secede from it. So there were a number of historical inaccuracies in what he had to say. Let me also say that I believe that Congress could act to require states that are still brandishing the Confederate flag to take it down under the 13th Amendment, which gives them the power to strike down the badges and incidents of slavery. But is to the First Amendment, you know, it's like an apple. Everybody wants to take one bite out of it. Somebody doesn't like sexist speech. Somebody doesn't like racist speech. Somebody doesn't like conservative speech. Somebody doesn't like liberal speech. Everybody takes an apple and a bite out of the apple, and pretty soon the apple's gone. So we do have to stand for the whole thing.
And Garrett Epps, you heard the arguments yesterday in the court, and the justices clearly were wrestling.
Absolutely.
We've had two very profoundly compelling arguments made on the sides, and the justices were really torn yesterday between these two arguments we've just heard. How did you read the mood of the court yesterday and where the justices seemed to be?
Well, they focused in on this one issue, which is this is not about people's ability to display the battle flag. You can put a battle flag on your car, on a sticker or a separate license plate.
Or the flag itself.
Have a damn flag out the window. But it's about whether the state of Texas is required by the First Amendment to put its official name on a plate that contains a battle flag or jihad or whatever else that people find threatening or offensive. And on the one hand, it's fairly radical to say, as Texas does, we can pick and choose any message we want. That was scary to them. But on the other hand, it's very scary to say the state must spend, you know, must as an official program with its name on it and state property, which is what license plates are, must allow anyone to put any message they want because it's a public forum. It's not clear that it is a public forum, and that's the decision that the justices are going to have to make.
But also there seemed to be a real unhappiness with the notion of the state being in a position of controlling speech, too.
Yes.
Because if you do say there are limits, then you have to say, what are the standards? And the justices seem very uneasy about the argument that where the line was.
Well, Texas didn't give them much to work with, and they basically said, we have a process and people can comment on proposed flags, and if people find it offensive, we won't approve it. And as you know, in a lot of First Amendment areas, the idea that offensiveness is a standard just doesn't fly. So they kept saying, can you give us a better standard? And Texas kept saying, no, we can do this for any reason we want. And they said, could you exclude Democrats? Could you have a Republican mm-hmm. license plate and no Democratic license plate? And the Solicitor General of Texas, he dodged on this, but he basically had to say, yes, we could do that if we chose to. That made them uncomfortable.
Catherine, how did you read the court's mood yesterday?
I agree with Garrett. They seem to be all over the map. I really was fascinated by the exchange at the end with Justices Kagan and Kennedy. I think these cases usually rest on Justice Kennedy, right? And so he was all over the map.
Amendment cases scramble the predictable order in this court, right?
And this one more than usual, I think, from what the way I read it.
There are a lot of strange bedfellows in this case, including, as you mentioned earlier, your own discomfort in some ways with siding with the state of Texas, even though you're opposing them on voting rights and many other issues.
Right. And I guess my point is also that, you know, if even the state of Texas, finds this offensive and doesn't want it on their license plate, you know, then there's something wrong with it. There's something wrong with the Confederate flag and, you know, the state's imprimatur on a license plate, driving around and intimidating people.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's talk to some of our listeners. We've got a bunch of emails and callers who want to join us. Let's start with Michael in Leapers Fork, Tennessee. Michael says, all of my male ancestors and one female ancestor who were alive at the time fought for the South. We celebrate them and honor the flag they fought under, not because of slavery or out of racism, but because they defended their home from foreign invaders. This is similar to the argument Johnny Hawley made. Catherine, your response to Michael.
I would say I respect that, you know, that people were, you know, forced to or volunteered to serve in an army to defend what was their country at the time. And that's perhaps for some people different than defending the institution of slavery. But I'm here next to a great historian who said, you know, knows that the 10 or 12% of people who were slave owners, you know, are the reason that the South, you know, kept its policy. And so that Confederate flag may mean one thing to some people, and to other people, it can be extremely intimidating. And it doesn't belong at a state license plate. That's my point.
You know, here we are literally 150 years. After the end of the Civil War, when the next few weeks will mark Appomattox and Lincoln's assassination. And Garrett, as someone who's written a lot about these issues, so when you sit here and think 150 years later, we're still having this argument.
Well, you know, to the caller, I would say that just to be clear, I'd be eligible for the sons of the veterans, too, if I happened to apply and grew up. Actually, I was about 10 years old before I realized the Civil War had happened 100 years ago. I thought it had happened a couple of years before I was born.
Well, you grew up in Richmond.
And those issues are still very lively. We don't live in a post-racial society. We don't even really live in a post-Confederate society. This, you know, as William Faulkner said, in the South, the past isn't dead. It's not even past. And it's a real wound. It really bothers people on a lot of levels, including people like your listener who feel disrespected.
Here's another caller, Jamie Raskin. Perhaps you can deal with this. Here's another email. Here's how you solve the problem, Ryan Clark writes to us. Put nothing other than state and tag numbers on plates. Keep it neutral when dealing with government-issued documents and identifiers. If you want to put a symbol on your car in the form of a sticker or whatnot, that's your prerogative under the First Amendment, as we've been saying. You know, bumper stickers are not regulated. But no state or federal entity should be implying support of something one way or another. That flag, he writes, has its place in history books and reenactments for educational purposes, but should not be sanctioned for use by the public sector outside of those parameters. Jamie, your view about that? I guess Jamie had to go run for a vote. Garrett, what do you think about Ryan's point? The justices did seem to yesterday to toy with the idea that one way of solving this problem was to ban all messages on license plates.
Well, James George, the lawyer for the Suns, told them explicitly, either include anything or scrap the program. And that truly outraged Justice Scalia, who is clearly going to vote with Texas. And he said, basically you want to silence people. And Justice Kennedy said, you want to discourage speech. Now, that is not something you want to hear Justice Kennedy say to you, because he reacts very badly to that. But that issue really was there. But the idea, I think, was not that the court would make that decision. The court, the idea was that if the court said Texas can't exclude anything, then the Texas legislature probably would scrap the program because they didn't want some messages being carried by official state rights.
Catherine, do you think that the court might ban all license plates, all messages?
I don't see that happening. I think they need to grapple with this issue and come to a standard.
I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. We're going to get to your phone calls as soon as we return, so please stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from CA Technologies, who believes that every business is in the software business. CA Software and Services work to help companies optimize their digital transformation in the application economy. More information is at ca.com. And from Inada, maker of the DreamWave massage chair, Japanese crafted with shiatsu point detection and 16 pre-programmed massages, including morning, night, and full body sessions. Learn more at dreamwavechair.com.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Abraham Lincoln was the first American president to be assassinated. And as the 150th anniversary of his death approaches, a historian explores how ordinary Americans mourn the loss of the 16th president. The Diane Rehm Show next hour. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane while she's away. And our subject this hour, the argument in the Supreme Court yesterday in the case Walker versus Texas Division, Sons of Confederate Veterans. The question, the license plates, the state of Texas, whether the state would be justified in permitting license plates that display the Confederate battle flag. And this was argued yesterday before the Supreme Court, and I have three experts with me to talk about it. Garrett Epps teaches law at the University of Baltimore School of Law. Catherine Cullerton-Gonzalez is at the Advancement Project, and Jamie Raskin is on the phone. He's a First Amendment law professor here at American University, also a Maryland state senator. One of the questions here was, what's the previous cases that the Supreme Court has dealt with? Catherine, the last time the court really dealt with a license plate case goes way back to one that came from New England, I believe. But it was a somewhat different case. But briefly fill in the listeners about what the court has previously done on license plates.
Well, sure. New Hampshire had a state license plate, or still has one, that that says "Live Free or Die," and that went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the court decided that that individuals, that that people, drivers, are not required to have that on their license plate if they disagree with it, so they could just, you know, cover over it, right? And so the flip side is what, you know, Justice Sotomayor asked brilliantly yesterday. You know, if that's the case, why can't the state also decide that, you know, it can cover up things that it doesn't want to communicate on its own behalf.
But the key difference is that was a case where the plaintiffs, the Jehovah's Witnesses, if I'm not mistaken, in that case, argued that we shouldn't be compelled to have a message that we disagree with. So that was it's a different legal principle than the one that this case.
Steve, I agree with you on that.
Jamie, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so the Jehovah's Witnesses didn't want to drive around brandishing the slogan "Live Free or Die," and the court said they could cover up that part of it, but their license would still be visible so the police could identify them and so on. So the traffic safety interest was properly vindicated there. And then, so then the question was, well, why can't the government then similarly dissociate itself from the speech of an individual? But of course, on that theory, you could say that, you know, the city government could allow people to take out a permit in a public park, but they could not allow people of left-wing or right-wing or extremist views because they want to dissociate themselves from those views. So the nub of the case really is, has the government created a little micro public forum in allowing these groups to form of citizens to petition to get one of these specialty license plates? And five federal circuits have looked at it, and all five have said yes. I think there might be one dissenting federal court out there, but all the others have said, yes, obviously, there are speech rights contained in this when you let the citizens get together, form a group, pay a special fee, and then put it on their license plate. That doesn't mean we have to like it. I mean, the Confederate flag, to me, advertises secessionism and slavery and racism and all of the things that I oppose. But, of course, people's First Amendment rights are not circumscribed by what I agree with.
And Jamie, you mentioned earlier that the state of Maryland is one of nine states where these kinds of license plates are permitted. But this case, and you mentioned it's been fought before, it's never come to the Supreme Court before, though. This is the first time?
Correct. This kind of case about viewpoint discrimination on the license plate, but in lots of other cases, like Rosenberger versus University of Virginia, the Supreme Court said that UVA could not fund and reimburse all student groups except those from a religious perspective. And the court said there that's a clear case of viewpoint discrimination. The government's got to be like an umpire, a referee that's neutral among all of the different, you know, ideas and views. Now, there are extreme cases, of course, where there's incitement to imminent lawless action or there's fighting words. And, you know, perhaps it could be shown that if somebody actually put a swastika on one of these things and people were ramming into them and so on, then you've created a clear and present danger. But, of course, in none of the programs where people can petition for plates, has anybody done that? So that's, you know, kind of a hypothetical.
Well, that was the issue I was talking with Catherine about a little bit earlier, that she was raising the issue of public safety in some ways. It can be incendiary to violence if particularly offensive or hateful slogans. But that's a different legal issue. Then you get to everybody understands that there is a limit to free speech when you're inciting to action or violence, right?
Yes, indeed. And there's a great case on that called Tinker versus Des Moines School District, where, you know, Mary Beth Tinker was suspended for wearing a black armband protesting the Vietnam War, took her case to the Supreme Court, and the court said, look, an undifferentiated fear or apprehension of disturbance is not enough. You've got to show that there's real civil unrest and fights breaking out and so on. So if any of these states had something like that, we would have a very different kind of case. But the truth is that in a free liberal society, people can handle other people's free speech. And, you know, and that might be the price we pay to allow our license plate to say, you know, Blair soccer or BCC alumni or Whitman baseball or whatever it might be.
Let me turn to some of our callers. And Grant in Radford, Virginia, you're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you for taking my call. Part of the problem we're experiencing in this country right now is strictly related to the fact that people are not taught true history. The Civil War was about states' rights. Slavery never even entered into it as an issue until the last 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. People think that slavery ended with the Civil War. The last slave in this country was not freed until 1909, 45 years after the Civil War, in the state of New Jersey. These things, though, are not being taught in our schools. And the gentleman on the board who said that states can't about the secession, I'm afraid he's wrong, and the gentleman from Texas is right. The statute he quoted did not come into effect until after the Civil War.
We really appreciate your call. Thanks very much. Garrett Epps, as we were saying earlier, this 150 years later, we're still having this debate.
Still fighting it. But, you know, one thing I want to point out, because we've heard about Tinker and the Live Free or Die case, weirdly enough, the case that really looms over this case is one that involves the cowboy actor Sam Phillips, who used to come on TV and say, "Beef, it's what's for dinner." If you remember those ads, those were funded by the government. The government taxed cattle growers to promote American beef. And a number of the cattle growers came to the Supreme Court and they said, "We shouldn't have to pay for this speech. We don't, you know, either we don't think the other beef is good or we don't want it for dinner. We it's compelled speech." And in an opinion by Justice Scalia, he wrote, "You have no First Amendment right, none, when your money is being used to fund speech by the government. That's a First Amendment free zone." And that is the case they are now trying to come to terms with, because that's a kind of an uncomfortable rule. And Texas says, "We're following your lead. First Amendment free zone. We can say anything we want." It's a big jump from "beef, it's what for dinner" to the Confederate flag. But that's, they're wondering, how do we get here?
Let me bring in William and Brad in Rochester, welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show. Hello. All right, let's go to William in Dallas, Texas. You're on the Diane Rehm Show, William.
Yes. Good morning. How are you?
Nice to have you with us. Go
good
ahead.
To be here. Real quick comment. I think the gentleman who offered up his rationale for wanting to have that logo placed on the tag is a little bit misinformed. Granted, you know, everybody has rights. The very symbol itself is designed to depict, support, and condone racism. I mean, that's not a personal view. I heard another gentleman talk about history. Lincoln was killed because of his attempt to cause change in this country. It's something that, you know, we've moved on from that. It has nothing to do with having a black president, anything like that. It's a mere fact. It's symbolism. People buy into it. There are 15 million people in the state of Texas, and they drive 30 million vehicles. The idea that they would import or want to have another bag of tax does not show someone who is very progressive, someone who's inclined to want to make the world a better place and to, in fact, support states' rights. It is a right of a state to change or not promote something that is not going to be good for the state. The mere fact that they would have something like that, a symbol on a tax, is not good for their economy. I don't think anybody wants that sort of a thing. Look at Alabama. In Alabama, they had the Dixie thing on, the Dixie symbol. They were progressive enough to not have that on that tag. Why would this gentleman, why would someone want to extend that much money to go all the way to the Supreme Court to condone an idea or support an ideology like that? We need to move on. Thank you for the time.
Thank you for your call. Jamie Raskin, how do you respond? I guess
he's voting again.
Jamie's voting again. Catherine, what's your point on to the caller?
I agree with the caller, and I think it's, you know, not only historical, but we need to put things into the present tense. We really don't live in a post-racial society. You know, I just got back from the 50th anniversary of Selma, marching across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, where people, you know, 50 years ago were battered and gave their lives to have voting rights. And I know that in the South, in Texas, there are twice as many, you know, attempted discrimination in voting than in the North. So if we put this in a context, we have license plates in the South, in a state that, you know, says it wants to celebrate diversity. I think if even the state of Texas says it's offensive to have a Confederate flag on our license plate, then, you know, there is something wrong with it.
But what about the argument that that's a slippery slope and that, you know, in this case, you agree with the state of Texas controlling speech. But what about a case where you disagree? I mean, Jamie Raskin and civil libertarians would argue you got to be consistent in your principles and you can't pick and choose. How do you answer that argument?
Right. That's why I think the Supreme Court needs to put a standard. The way the law is right now, it's all or nothing. So, you know, even the Sons of Confederate Veterans attorney said that, you know, you can either let us have our brand of speech on, you know, the state license plates, or nobody can have, you know, any speech besides, you know, regular neutral government speech on the license plates. And I think that license plates are a government entity. So, you know, we've got to grapple with this and come up with a balancing test. And the balancing test should be something like strict scrutiny because there are free speech rights. But also keep in mind that there are limits to it that have to do with public safety and things that the government would want to represent or not.
Garrett Epps, often, as Catherine just said quite rightly, there's a balancing test. Justices and legislatures grope for a way to reconcile these conflicting. For an hour, we've been talking about forceful conflicting principles, and both sides have compelling arguments. Is there a balancing test out there that you can see that the court might reach for?
Well, Justice Breyer, interestingly enough, he kept bringing the argument back to, you know, let's balance interests. And he said the burden on an individual speech of this rule is very slight because they can just put the Confederate plate, a separate one that they buy at the truck stop. So there's a very slight burden on speech. He said, and the state's interest, he said, it may not be compelling, but it's pretty genuine. You don't want people to be riled up and offended by stuff that the state prints up. So he said, if that's the balance, then the state will win. But I didn't hear any discussion of strict scrutiny. It was fascinating because neither side would let them go there. It was all or nothing on both sides.
Neither side presented a tentative balance test.
Honestly, I think if one of those lawyers had come in with a passable rule, they would have won the case at oral argument because the court kept saying, what's the rule? Give me a rule, please.
Give me a standard. Give me a guideline for how we go forward.
Throw me a bone. You know, they were begging for it, and they didn't get anything.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's listen to another one of our callers, let's go to Harry in Portsmouth. Welcome, Harry. You're on The Diane Rehm Show. Nope, you don't have Harry. Let's go to Cal in Little Rock, Arkansas. Cal, you're on The Diane Rehm Show.
Yes, good morning, all. I was just wondering, basically, what is, in fact, the fundamental reason for free speech? Why do we have that in our Constitution? It seems to me that it's there to exchange ideas about whatever it is you want to exchange ideas about, whether it be popular or unpopular. But it's to talk, it's to communicate mentally. But when your conflict of ideas results and goes into war, you're no longer exchanging ideas, you're exchanging bodies. And it seems to me that this is an opportunity, I think, for the Supreme Court to, you know, to finally say, hey, maybe there is some limits to this free speech from the point of, from the idea of a war. I mean, I think Germany was pretty good by getting rid of the Nazi sort of business and not allowing that as free speech anymore because it's no longer an exchange of ideas. We've now gone to the ultimate decider for the idea, that is, you have killed hundreds of thousands of your own people, and that should count for something.
Thank you very much for the call. Jamie Raskin is as a state senator, he's had to run off. I apologize for to cast votes at the state capitol in Annapolis. But, Catherine, this is an issue that's come up several times in this conversation. Even Jamie, as ardent defender of the civil liberties view, admits that there are limits when free speech crosses into action, when it becomes an incendiary a clear and present danger to the public safety. Everybody, you know, the classic formulation, you can't cry fire in a crowded theater. As you think about this, is there a balancing test out there? Is there a way that the interests on both sides, the free speech interest versus the interest you've expressed of protecting people from the most hateful and damaging kind of speech, where would if the court asked your advice, where would you draw the line?
I think that every fundamental right deserves strict scrutiny. I think that free speech deserves strict scrutiny. The right to vote deserves strict scrutiny. This also involves racial discrimination, and the equal protection rights inherent in that and in the 14th and 15th Amendment also deserve strict scrutiny. So across the board, there has to be a compelling state interest, and it has to be narrowly tailored to limit it. I think I don't know what the court is going to say, but I would hope that the state of Texas will just stop issuing license plates that have anything to do with any point of view, because that's also the easy way out, and they can stop this practice that they're against.
Jamie Raskin, I know you had to run off, and I asked you asked this question earlier, but we were talking about the balancing test, the possibility that seems remote in this case. But as you listen to the arguments, and from your point of view, is there a balance, potential balancing test out there where these two conflicting values can be reconciled?
You know, it's possible they could invent a completely new doctrinal category of something like a government-endorsed speech forum or something like that. But we're really splitting hairs at that point in order to avoid, I think, a clear free speech question. I mean, you know, people love the flag. I love the American flag. To me, it represents a victory over slavery and victory over the Nazis in World War II and so on. But our neo-Confederate friend from Texas says the flag was the flag of slavery before the Civil War for many decades. And indeed, you know, even when Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, it did not apply to the border states, to Maryland and Delaware and Kentucky, which had slavery. So his argument there, as opposed to everything else, is not completely off base. But the people
I'm going to have to end it there. Jamie Raskin, professor of law at AU, Garrett Epps from University of Baltimore Law, Catherine Culleton from the Advancement Project. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in for Diane. Thanks for spending your morning with us.